Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and NBA at FanRag Sports, and also College Buckets at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, Matt, they fucked it up. They did it. They did exactly. We were going on a timeline. We were doing things exactly to the T. We had to get through these last seven damn games, and they fucked it up.
Are we surprised? Honestly, are we at all surprised that the Bulls not only messed up by beating Orlando to complete a season sweep of that pitiful team, four wins over Orlando, that hurts the Bulls tank this season, but then also unexpectedly, but also kind of expectedly, of course they beat the Washington Wizards. The Wizards have been notorious all season long for losing games that they should easily win. They've been losing to tanking teams all season long. They were without John Wall. It was a Sunday afternoon matinee when a lot of teams just kind of phone it in. And also, and this is something we can talk about a little later in the show if you want, if you look at where the Wizards are in the standings right now, I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't mind sliding from the sixth seed, because Cleveland, nobody wants to play Cleveland in the first round, and Washington can't catch Indiana in the fifth seed, but they can slide down to either seventh or eighth if they let Miami or Milwaukee pass them, because they're only a game up on both of those teams. Maybe Washington was just saying, you know what, it's Sunday afternoon, it's Easter, let's all just mail this one in and maybe lessen our chances of having to face LeBron in the first round. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, I mean, nobody... who really wants to play LeBron in the first round of the playoffs, especially like when people are starting to question him a little bit more than maybe some previous seasons, especially with the roster that he's going to go into the playoffs with. But yeah, man, in the fashion that the Bulls won this game in Orlando too, it just is even more depressing, I think, than anything else. And like, before we start talking about any of this, I want to put this out the very beginning part of the show, just not to anger anybody that might be listening. We understand that the players are trying to, they're out there doing their what they're supposed to do. Make buckets, play hard, and try and win these games. This is what they're supposed to do. I understand that. We get that. I'm not mad at the players for doing their job. But man, like, winning two games at the end of the season, which really didn't do that. Like, what does this do the team any good? It doesn't. And to look at a game that's a team high in 18 points, a game high 18 points from Aaron Gordon, like, this game was brutal. Like, the Bulls shot 35.7% from the field, and the Orlando Magic shot 33% from the field. So beyond that, it was one of the most disgusting games, I think, of the year in the NBA. And if we're looking at just shooting percentage wise, like, this, I don't know where this stacks up in terms of terrible games against two terrible teams, but nothing good came out of this, for me at least, in this Orlando matchup.
It was gross. Like, it was a battle of teams that are trying to lose, because Orlando still can move up or down depending on how they finish out the season. They're a half game shy of Atlanta for the for number three in the draft lottery standings, only a game and a half behind Memphis for the two, and they're only up on Dallas by a half a game. So Orlando is absolutely trying to tank, and you think that the Bulls going 9 minutes without a field goal in the third quarter of that game against Orlando could, you know, put them in a solid position to lose that game. The Bulls were 2 of 22 in the third quarter. 2 of 22. And they still came back and won that game because Orlando had a scoreless streak of their own in the fourth quarter that lasted more than 6 minutes. So, I mean, this is literally a juggernaut versus juggernaut in how bad these teams are and how badly they're tanking. And this is something that you can say for the Bulls' win over Orlando and their win over Washington. Unfortunately, the Bulls got hot from deep against the Wizards, hit a franchise-tying 18 three-pointers, 18 of 34 for 53%, whereas the Wizards chucked up 30 and only made 8. But the Bulls are putting out tanking lineups to close the games. I mean, you look at yesterday's game, Rolo and Holiday each only played 17 minutes. Bobby Portis only played 16 minutes, whereas Cameron Payne, 25, Felicio, 21, Jaren Grant, 26. Archie Diacono got 15 minutes. Sean Kilpatrick, who's been here for all of a week, got 23 minutes off the bench. Honestly, I'm surprised they didn't dust off Omer Asik and throw him in there in the fourth quarter. The Bulls are absolutely trying to lose these games by limiting their starters' minutes to the first half and certainly limiting role players' minutes in the fourth quarter. Markkanen did get some third-quarter minutes but did not play at all in the fourth quarter against Washington. I'm pretty sure the same is true for Orlando. The Bulls are trying to tank. They are. They're just unfortunately failing because whether it's Orlando or Washington, they're going up against teams that are tanking just as hard or phoning it in. And, I mean, that Wizards effort yesterday was pathetic. Pathetic. The Bulls did everything they could to lose that game other than purposefully bricking three-point attempts off the side of the back.
Yeah, I think the most I'm more frustrated at the Magic win than I am about this Wizards game. To just like highlight a couple things from this Wizards game, though, that I did like. Lauri Markkanen, really nice, really solid game. 7 for 11 from the field, 5 for 8 from 3. He's got to the line a bunch, 6 rebounds, 23 points in only 25 minutes of play. So that was pretty decent. I thought a lot of good things from him. Obviously, Bobby Portis continuing his trying to strengthen this entire season by having a nice stretch to end here. 6 for 10 from the field, 4 for 5 from 3, 18 points off the bench. But yeah, like you said, they were trying to mix and match some of these lineups. Sean Kilpatrick was 6 for 13. They were just trying to throw anybody and anybody, everybody out there to try to mix and match these lineups and try to out-tank what the Wizards were doing on that Sunday. So I don't know. Between looking at the entire schedule and being disappointed, not only that the Bulls picked up this win against the Wizards, which is meaningless, but also this meaningless game against the Magic, where does this put the Bulls now? I know a lot of people on Twitter were trying to write this off as, you know, all right, no more top five. Like, realistically, if you had been listening to the show over the last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, we told you that the possibility of being in the top five is slim to none in terms of where the Bulls will end up. Now, you can bank on the percentage of whether they get a top three or a number one pick. Your chances get greater as you go higher, but we knew it. We knew that the Bulls weren't going to be probably end up in the top five, but hoping that maybe they could slide to 6 or 7, now that looks like, you know, we're going to have to cross our fingers and that this Brooklyn Nets series turns out to be absolute hot garbage from the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, you absolutely, the only chance the Bulls have at not being 8th or 9th, honestly, because the Knicks still aren't going away if the Bulls accidentally win another game or two. The Knicks are only a game behind them in 9th with 27 wins as opposed to the Bulls 26. So there is still a chance that the Bulls could move up to 6th because they can and should lose both of their remaining games to Brooklyn because Brooklyn has no incentive to tank. Their first round pick is going to Cleveland for this 2018 draft, and they've been playing spirited ball. They're actually 4-6 in their last 10 games and have no reason to lose on purpose. So the Bulls should lose both of those games. Sacramento, meanwhile, picked up a win on the road against the Lakers last night and still have remaining games against the pitiful Grizzlies and even more pitiful Phoenix Suns. And the Kings have 25 wins. So if the Kings win both of those games, that's 27 right there. They would, assuming the Bulls lose out, might be able to move up past Sacramento and past Brooklyn if Brooklyn manages to beat the Bulls twice and the Bulls lose out from here on out. The Bulls could stay at 26 wins. Brooklyn can get to 27. So can Sacramento. So the Bulls can still get up to sixth. I think reaching Dallas, currently in fifth, is out of the equation as of right now. Dallas is 23-54. They do have some winnable games left. They are also playing the Suns to finish the season, and they also have a game against the Magic remaining. So Dallas could win those both of those games and get to, say, 25 wins, but I don't see them winning any of the remaining games on their schedule, and Chicago's already at 26. So as frustrating as it is that looking at this saying, all right, well, the Bulls positioning themselves to at least fifth for the draft lottery standings when those ping pong balls go live in a couple, you know, in a month or whenever that happens, six is the best they can do. Because of these two straight wins, they screwed the pooch. They could have, if they had lost both of those games, Orlando would have been in play with another win. The Bulls would have two more losses under their belt. Maybe they could have gone up to fifth or even fourth if they got really lucky. But now they're going to need to lose to Brooklyn twice, and they're going to need help from Sacramento if they want to move from 8th to 6th or 7th. It's possible, but that's the best they can do.
We're going to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. Just a word from our sponsor real quick. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, to go along with this tanking mentality here at the last five games for at least the Bulls, the Kings have four games left in this series. Talking about failure and what this season meant, I know I've repeated it over and over again, and I said if the Bulls don't get a top five pick, this entire season was a failure. I've already kind of walked that back a little bit just because of the things we've seen from Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn and maybe some emergences from guys like David Nwaba and Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine putting things together in a decent fashion, especially at the end of this season. So I wouldn't say it was a complete failure, but would you agree with me that if the Bulls can slide into the top seven, there is at least seven players at the top of this draft that I would be comfortable with having on this team? Obviously, some I would like more than others, but if we're talking about one through seven, the talent there is something that the Bulls can work with. Once we get out of that top seven, I feel like that second, maybe even if we're talking even third tier of players, starts to be picked between 8 and 14 in that lottery, and that's where I think I get a lot of question marks. Obviously, we got Lauri Markkanen at number 7 last year, so a lot of question marks for me between 8 and 14. Would you feel comfortable in saying that if the Bulls end up in the top 7, that whatever player that they do take at that position, you'd be pretty comfortable with moving forward next season?
No.
No?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, you're saying that top seven, you'd feel comfortable. To me, I mean, okay, look, as much as we've seen, or I guess really haven't seen, in Duke's tournament run out of Marvin Bagley, especially in their loss in the Elite Eight game, they strangely did not go to him all that much. I think he only got like 8 or 9 shots up. I just, as far as fit for the Bulls, I don't think Bagley and Markkanen playing together in a front court makes a whole lot of sense. Bagley trying to play defense in the NBA, so far from what we've seen from him in his collegiate career, is going to be a nightmare. So if you're talking about the top six guys, if you're putting Bagley in that list of the top six, I don't want him on the Bulls' radar. Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, Mo Bamba, Jaren Jackson Jr., and then Michael Porter Jr., with a bit of an asterisk there because some teams might be worried about him and his injury that he sustained this season. So those are your top six, right? I'm pretty sure that's what everybody agrees is the top six. I don't think anybody's putting Trae Young or Colin Sexton above any of those guys. So if those are your top six and the Bulls end up going seventh or eighth and end up taking a question mark on Trae Young or Colin Sexton or Mikal Bridges of Villanova, like, yeah, okay, fine. I guess that's the best you can do. But I would absolutely much rather have one of those guys in the top six outside of Marvin Bagley. I want one of those guys. I would rather, much rather have one of those guys than I would Mikal Bridges or Trae Young or Colin Sexton or Wendell Carter.
All right, so are you saying that you would be upset if, what, just argument's sake, if Marvin Bagley fell to the 6 or 7 spot and he was the best player available, you would be still kind of upset that the Bulls got him?
Yeah, I don't think he's a good fit for this Bulls roster. I just don't.
And I don't think he's going to slide that far. I honestly don't, just with his size, his length, his age. Obviously, the tournament wasn't huge for him, and it wasn't a real great showcase. I like I said, I think I blame that more on the guards, especially in their last game, than on him in any capacity. But still, like you said, there's a lot of question marks on defense for him. But I still don't think he's going to slide past 5.
And I would love it if that happened, because it means that maybe there will be a guy there for the Bulls that is a better fit for that team and more worth taking. If somebody above the Bulls takes Bagley, I'll be happy about that, because it means maybe they'll be able to steal Michael Porter Jr. Maybe they'll be able to steal, Bamba, or maybe Doncic if everybody is afraid of him. Because I'm pretty sure we can all agree that DeAndre Ayton and Jaren Jackson Jr. are going somewhere in the top 3, right?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty likely at this point.
I think between, so Jaren Jackson Jr. has put himself in the conversation of top 5 players and potentially a top 5 pick. And that slid guys like Trae Young, like you had said, Colin Sexton down the board. Miles Bridges has slid down the board. Mikal Bridges has kind of hung around between 9 and 12, I think, for a lot of people. But I think the biggest hope here is if the Bulls can get into 7 or 6, all it takes is one guy to slide, right? And if you're the Bulls, you're taking whoever slides out of that top 5. So whether that's Michael Porter Jr. because of the question marks with his back, or it's Marvin Bagley because of the defense, or it's Mo Bamba because outside of his length and his size, there's not one like real dominant skill that he has. He might even slide too. So there's a few players, and maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. doesn't even get drafted as high as a top 5 pick or a top 3 pick. So I think I'm comfortable if the Bulls end up with 6 or 7. I'm comfortable like kind of sitting back and seeing who's might slide down the board a little bit, because usually I feel like some guys that do end up sliding in the draft end up turning out to be pretty good NBA players. But this top 7, like, if we're talking about anything that the Bulls need in terms of big guys or wing players, I'm all right. I'm all right if the Bulls can sneak themselves into 6 or 7. But I think once you're talking about 8 through 14, that's where you're getting to the third tier of players. And that's where we're going to have to rely more on the Bulls scouting than anything else. And over the years, like, I can't really trust the Bulls scouting system at this point, because there's been picks where they've completely flat out missed in the lottery, and they're banking on guys that have gotten picked in the lottery before that they traded for, cough, cough, Cameron Payne, and haven't turned out.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean when you say missed in the lottery? I mean, do you count
1 through 14?
So Denzel Valentine, they picked him 14th, right? Or
yeah, I wouldn't even really consider him a miss.
Who are you referring to specifically?
Doug McDermott.
Okay.
Cameron Payne, who they traded for, he was taken 13th?
Yeah, they didn't draft him.
Sure, but they scouted him at that time, and
he was 14th.
Okay, 14th. So another 14th pick.
I'm just saying, look, I mean, you can have skepticism about the Bulls and their scouting team because of misses in recent years. But really, they have had as many, if you're talking about the entirety of the John Paxson era in the front office, they've had just as many hits as they have misses.
That's true.
So, look, and when you say, you're weary about trusting the Bulls front office when it comes to their scouting and knowing, that's fair, because it's not like they're batting 1,000. So if that's why you want to make that argument, that's fine. They are certainly not batting 1,000 when it comes to scouting and drafting the right guys. I mean, it's hilarious. Like, Marquise Teague just played his, first minutes since 2014 on a team that's purposely trying to tank, and that's probably why they signed him to an end-of-the-year contract. We know who the Bulls' misses are, but there have absolutely also been hits in the John Paxson era. And so you can be scared that if the Bulls end up picking somewhere 6th through 8th as opposed to top 5, which was the plan coming into this season, then we're all scared that they might not get a impact player the way that they all said was moving forward, yes, we're getting these three pieces in the Jimmy Butler trade, but we're anticipating really a fourth piece to add to that because we're anticipating a high lottery pick. To the Bulls Nation, high lottery pick meant ideally top three, maybe top five. And here we are sitting in, you know, on the outskirts at 6 through 8. And that's why everybody's nervous. And that's why once you know that those elite level lottery franchise changing talents are off the board 1 through 5, it's kind of a toss up as far as what the Bulls get and how good that player might be. And that's why everybody is sitting on pins and needles waiting for this draft lottery.
So if you're the Bulls and you're 6 through 8, you end up anywhere between 6 through 8. What do you think they're more likely to do? Take best available or take more for fit? Because if it's best available, we're looking at more of a guy that's going to play the 4 or the 5, I'm thinking. Or if you take what you need, which is a wing, then you're reaching on a guy. If Jaren Jackson Jr. is already off the board and you're looking for a wing player in that top 10, you're reaching on a guy maybe in Mikal Bridges, and maybe it's not a reach. Maybe he turns out to be a really good player. Or you take a guard at that point at Trae Young, or you take Colin Sexton like we had talked about. What do you think the Bulls are more likely to do, maybe in terms of what they've done in the past history? What's worked out best for, I guess, tanking teams? And I guess it's case-by-case basis, but if you're the Bulls front office, what are you doing? Are you taking best talent available there, or maybe what more fits to what the Bulls are trying to do?
I think it's honestly hard to predict because for so many years, the Bulls front office was known for going best available as opposed to drafting for need. And also for years had the tendency to take guys who are multiple year players at the college level. Denzel Valentine's a perfect example. Not the youngest, not the most athletic, but a 4-year guy from a reputable program like Michigan State. That is what the Bulls front office had been doing for years. Last year, they didn't necessarily stray too far away from that. They strayed away from, we want guys who have played at the college level for multiple years. Markkanen was a one-and-done kid, but most of the talent in the top 10 of that 2017 draft class were one-and-done kids. They drafted for need because Paxson said going into last year's draft, we are going to draft a shooter. We need to address the lack of shooting on this team. And they could have gone in a variety of directions as far as 1 through 5 on the floor where that shooting came from. It just so happened that Markkanen was probably at 7, best player available, and a shooter who was a perfect stretch 4 for Fred Hoiberg's offense. So they addressed the need that they desperately needed the shooting, and probably also with Markkanen at 7, was best available. Coming into this year's draft, you know that given the young core that they have and who's on that board up there, that it's not necessarily likely that they're going to be looking at a multiple-year college player because there aren't too many of those in that top 6 to 8 of that draft lottery, those players expected to be at the top. As far as the need part, I think that the Bulls are going to go best available. I really do. I mean, other than maybe looking for a guy who might be a perfect fit or shying away from taking a gamble on Trae Young or Colin Sexton because they still have great faith in Chris Dunn, I think they're going to go best available. To me, it's, you know, as I said, it's hard to predict, but given what the Bulls situation is right now, the one thing I would be leaning towards, if I had to guess, is that with the way they feel about Chris Dunn, they're not going to take a point guard. Anything else is up for grabs.
I'm with you, too, on that, because think about it. We'd be talking about a different situation if Zach LaVine wasn't such a poor defender, right? Like, if Zach LaVine was league average at the defense, you could slide him to the 3 and figure out a way to play Chris Dunn, one of those guards at that position. Like, Trae Young is known to be a terrible defender. Like, that's what we've seen in college all year long. And you could make up for that with an average defender in Zach LaVine and an above average defender and almost, you know, hopefully elite a talent in Chris Dunn's defense. You could make up for that by taking somebody who might be a ridiculous scorer in this league in Trae Young. Same thing with Colin Sexton. It's hard because Colin Sexton and Chris Dunn, I feel like, are sort of the same players. And even if you had Colin Sexton become your point guard, moving Chris Dunn to the 2, he's not he's not a great shooter. He's not a pure scorer, so you kind of have two guys that like to attack the basket. And Chris Dunn, obviously, that's been our one biggest thing, is hopefully he improves on that. But I'm with you. I don't think I don't see a guard in a situation where that makes sense for the Bulls. For me, I think it's best available too, and then you just kind of mix and match and you just see how it works and you see what you can do, because like that's going to be part of Fred Hoiberg's job, is like trying to figure out how to pair these guys and all this talent that they do have into a system that works. So for me, if it's between a guy that slides down, like, I don't know, Michael Porter Jr. or Mohamed Bamba or Marvin Bagley, say, even if they slide too, like, I'm all right with that. I'm cool with it. I think if the Bulls end up where they are, they win a couple more games this season and they stay at eight, I think then I'm kind of tossing my hands up and saying, all right, well, I guess we're taking a third tier player and we spent an entire season trying to lose and built a roster to lose just to get the eighth pick. I'd feel more comfortable at 6 and 7. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair. And I would also point out that, and that's something else Bulls fans need to be keeping an eye on. You mentioned it earlier, the Pelicans have lost four straight. As of right now, they're sitting 18th in the Tankathon standings. A bunch of teams crowded around them, but they are, most importantly, only a game in front of Denver. If Denver wins out and the Pelicans lose another game or two, all of a sudden the Pelicans can enter the lottery as the 14th team in the lottery. And even if they don't, say they end up picking somewhere 15 through 17, there are other talents in that area, as far as what we're expecting from this first round, where the Bulls could get that wing guy as, you know, maybe a flyer. Say they don't feel like Mikal Bridges is worth taking at 6 or 7 or 8, like Kevin Knox of Kentucky. Certainly a guy who's projected to go in the mid-teens. He's kind of a combo player that the Bulls might look at there. Lonnie Walker of Miami, more like, you know, prototypical shooting guard, but might be a guy that you can look into filling for that wing void for the Bulls. Zaire Smith of Utah, another shooting guard that might be able to play some wing minutes in the NBA. Another guy projected to go mid to late teens in the draft right now. You know, that's something else to think about as far as what this Bulls team is going to do with their pick. And it might also have a factor in where exactly that Pelicans pick will be. And if the Bulls see somebody they like projected to go in those mid to late teens, if that's where that Pelicans pick is.
Real quick, a question for you. If the Bulls, all right, so if the Phoenix Suns want to trade one of those picks right now, they would be getting the 15th and the 16th pick. One coming from Miami, one coming from Milwaukee. Total of 3 picks in the first round, 3 picks in the first 16 picks. Would it matter at all if the Bulls wanted to take that 18, say the Pelicans end up at 18 or 19 and maybe move up to 16 or 15? Maybe you can deal off a guy like, I don't know, Robin Lopez to a Phoenix team who's trying to turn the corner with some veteran players, or Justin Holiday with a really nice contract there to move up. Does that do anything for you? Does that make the meter move at all if the Bulls tried to move up with that pick? Do you think that they would try to move up for that pick? Maybe talking about somebody that you did like, and that I know Ricky O'Donnell liked too, is Lonnie Walker's projected to go between 13 and 16. If the Bulls do end up with a big man or a guy that plays the 4 or the 5 and they do need a wing, do you see them maybe moving up to try and pick whatever's left of that tier 3, tier 4 group of this first round of the first round? And would a deal be in play? Like, could you make a deal with Phoenix? Would they even want to trade one of those top picks to try and acquire a veteran like what the Bulls have on their roster right now?
I mean, I guess it's in the realm of possibility. I would say not necessarily very likely for the Bulls to do something like that, to just move up a few spots. Like, say the Pelicans do hold on and don't miss the playoffs and don't go into the lottery and end up picking somewhere between like 18 and 22. To move up from that area to 14 or 15, unless there's a guy that the Bulls really, really like and know won't be on the board by the time it rolls around to them, I just don't see it, especially depending on what the Bulls would be asked to give up or take on, you might say, for that deal to go through. To trade up 3 or 4 spots and to trade away Robin Lopez and take on a bad deal, I don't know if that's necessarily as good of a way that they can use Robin Lopez as, say, trying to find something else, trying to find a different deal for him that isn't necessarily a deal that has to take place on draft night. As far as what you can best do for the team moving forward, taking on a bad contract and getting another, you know, a pick for 2019 or something like that, or adding a second round pick in 2018 or whatever it may be, I just don't know if moving up only a few spots would be worth it for the Bulls to pull off something like that.
Agree. Just curious because, I mean, there's going to be some talk about whether or not the Bulls take, you actually use that pick or they try to leverage it something for a deal somewhere. So there's going to be plenty of talk about that pick. Obviously, the Bulls, they're not going to move that lottery pick. We're taking whatever players there. Like I just said, to kind of wrap this conversation up, I don't know about a lot of Bulls fans out there, but I'd feel a lot more comfortable if the Bulls just took whatever slides at 6 and 7 than rather having to bet on the Bulls scouting system to take maybe one of the first players in that tier three that I was talking about. We can kind of go in depth of each tier and where we see those players over the next couple of weeks as we head into the NBA draft combines coming up in a month. The draft's only two months away. It's coming up quick, so we can kind of do that, but that's kind of where I sit. It seems like you sit like you have a little bit more faith in the front office and the scouting system that the Bulls have in place if they do end up at 8.
I'm just saying I wanted to remind Bulls Nation, because Bulls Nation is so quick to say, oh my God, this Bulls front office sucks at drafting. Look at all these busts. Look at all this crap. They're terrible at their jobs. Because that's the narrative, because people in Chicago, for the most part, are sick of this front office and want to see them replaced. But do yourself a favor and go back and look. And there have been some great draft picks in the John Paxson front office era. You cannot just immediately dismiss this Bulls front office as being terrible at the draft when they've done things like drafting Jimmy Butler with the 30th pick. Bulls fans are so quick to say, oh my God, like they passed on Draymond Green. What a bunch of idiots. Yeah, a bunch of teams passed on Jimmy Butler and the Bulls took him. Look what kind of player he turned out to be. I'm just saying, for every bad example of a Bulls draft pick in the first round in the John Paxson era, there's an example of a good one. You just have to remind yourself of that. And instead of immediately pressing the panic button, if the Bulls do not get lucky and end up drafting somewhere 6 through 8, as opposed to 1 through 5, which was the plan, do not immediately dismiss the Bulls front office as, well, they're going to screw this up, because they don't always screw it up. And that's coming from someone who has definitely been a critic and a harsh critic of this Bulls front office when it's fair criticism. Remind yourselves that they have had some solid draft picks in recent years. How is Bobby Portis looking right now at 22? Like a pretty good pick, right?
Right. And I even think about back to, like, I remember the Bulls got grilled for taking Joakim Noah where they took Joakim Noah coming off that national championship. Like, that was a pretty solid pick. Like, for Bulls fans, Joakim Noah was awesome. Taj Gibson, too, where they drafted Taj Gibson at. You bring up good points, and I think maybe it's more of the recent history of guys where I think for a lot of people, maybe it's me more than anything else, and maybe there's some other Bulls fans out there that feel this way, but that Doug McDermott
Doug McDermott trade.
I think that is what soured me.
90% of Bulls fans who are pissed off at the front office and think that they don't know how to draft, that is the first example they go to.
I think that it's true because it got even worse after draft night.
Yeah, it did. It got progressively worse. And you think about, oh man, would you rather have Doug or, you know, Yusuf Nurkic and Gary Harris right now? And then what the Bulls ended up getting for Doug, which was essentially nothing. And obviously that is what everybody goes to. But hey, guess what? John Paxson has done a lot more over the course of his, you know, decade plus tenure running this Bulls team than accidentally make an oopsie with Doug McDermott.
That's true. So, and well, the Bulls also have their secret weapon in Doug Collins too. So we'll have to see what his draft analysis
is. Senior advisor. Come on, Doug, make yourself useful. Convince Gar Forman that he needs no part of anyone coming out of Ames, Iowa.
Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us, Dash Radio, dashradio.com, in the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. We're doing a giveaway. We'll have that out. I know I said yes. I said on Friday that we'd be posting that. That'll be going up today. So make sure you're checking us out on Twitter and on social media. Stay subscribed here at Locked On Bulls. And go give our shows, our brother and sister shows, some love. Locked On Cubs, who just had a big weekend this weekend. Matt will be on the show this week. And all of our other friends, too. Locked On Bears, as well, as they've made some moves here. And their draft is coming up in a couple weeks, so you're going to want to stay tuned in if you're a huge Chicago Bears fan. But for Jordan Malley and for Matt Peck, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful night. Enjoy the national championship, too. Keep your eyes on Mikal Bridges and Mo Wagner. We are out, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.